Hello and welcome to the Dynasty Guru Podcast, Episode 5. We're going to take a break from the overview of the TDG consensus rankings. We'll be returning to our regularly scheduled formatting soon with the outfield rankings. But today we're going to talk about a new concept that launched recently at TDG, which is a new kind of expert league similar to TDGX for longtime readers who remember that from 2 or 3 years ago. We have recently kicked off a 99 round deep 15 team draft and hold dynasty league. Very insane and masochistic. And we know that the listeners want nothing more than to hear about several people talk about their fantasy team for a long 30 to 45 minutes. So to introduce myself, I'm Tyler Baber, writing at The Dynasty Guru, occasionally at Banished to the Pen, and you can find me at Twitter at Tyler's Notes. I also have Lance Brozdowski, Jack Cecil, and Jesse Meehan. Lance, tell us where we can find you.
Yeah. Hey, guys. How you doing? My name is Lance Brozdowski. I am the founder and managing editor of Big3Sports.com. It's the site I founded when I was back in college. I also just jumped on with the Razzball crew, actually. So I started writing for them on the fantasy side. And I occasionally write for two SB Nation outlets, Fake Teams, which is kind of their fantasy arm, and also Fish Stripes, which is the Miami Marlins page. So I guess mainly all my work's concentrated on Big Three Sports. My handle on Twitter is Lance Brozdow, B-R-O-Z-D-O-W. I encourage you to follow me. And if you ever have questions or anything, shoot something out. I'm always willing to throw my feedback out there and whatnot. So, yeah, I guess that's it. I can pass it off to someone else now.
Jack?
So you can find me at Jack Cecil 1. I write exclusively at The Dynasty Guru. I actually previously wrote over at Fake Teams when Ray was still there. So hope he's enjoying his life moved on from being the admin at that site. And if you really want to get in touch with me, the Facebook or Twitter page, I spend a lot of time posting all the stuff and replying to people in there. So that's a good way to get in contact.
Jesse?
Yeah, I write exclusively at the Dynasty Guru as well, about baseball, Dynasty Leagues, obviously. And then you can find me at Twitter at Jesse Meehan, M-E-E-H-A-N. And that's the best place to contact me with any questions yet.
And Jack mentioned you can follow the league we're going to be discussing in the draft, but we're going to be discussing TDG 99 on the Dynasty Guru Facebook page, which is Facebook.com/group/DynastyGuru, The Dynasty Guru, maybe. Go to The Dynasty Guru, click the Facebook icon, and you will go there. Please join, discuss the terrible picks that we're going to be discussing, or the reaches, or the great picks, or how terrible Brett's team is looking, even though he's the real Dynasty Guru. Also on Twitter, at Dynasty Guru, there's a lot of writers across multiple sites, not just TDG, as Lance represents, who are participating in this league. So I'm going to talk really quickly about sort of the format, how it came to be. It's an idea that sprung from some conversations among TDG writers on draft and hold leagues, NFBC style, where essentially you do a standard draft with a fairly standard format, and there's no transaction. This turned into a little bit of a thought experiment. What would a dynasty version of this look like? So what we are doing is there's a nominal buy-in to participate in this league. Even the experts had to open their pocketbooks for this. Essentially, we are drafting in a 99-round draft, and I'll talk a little bit about the roster construction and the format there in a minute. But the team that you have is essentially the team that you will have for at least the next 5 years. That's when payouts will stop. We probably will keep going because we are all fools, and until the world is swallowed by the sun, this league will continue. So in terms of the actual format, if you'd like to follow along at home, We're using Fantrax, but you could use probably any service that has a deep enough pool of players. After year one, there will be 10 cuts where the preference is you should cut your retired players or the players who have left the major leagues for Korea or something like that. And there will be a 10 round draft every year. There's also the universe of players this is open to is only players who are major league signing eligible. So no international players, no high schoolers, signed players as of draft day, or major league free agents. In terms of actual scoring format, we're using sort of a modified standard roto format. We've added OPS to the hitting categories, and we're using saves plus holds and strikeout to walk ratio as additional pitching categories. All that said, let's start with Lance. What did you see about this league that made you think, yeah, I want to do that instead of running for the hills screaming?
I mean, I think the main thing for me was that I'm not really invested too heavily in any dynasty leagues, and it's something I'm a little bit more fresh with. So it's funny because one of the things you mentioned in the quick recap of what we were going to talk about in the email that you had circulating between all us was talk about the prep that you did. And I don't think I'm prepping as we're doing this, which is kind of hilarious. So I reached out to Eric Roseberry, who is a member of this league as well. And he's a writer for the SB Nation Red site, I believe. And I was like, hey, that sounds like a really cool format. I think he sent out a tweet or something. And then he direct messaged me and asked, you know, if I'd be interested. And I was. And I was like, you know what, let's try this out. And I don't really know why I was interested in it. I think maybe just because I follow a lot of the prospect base, and that's something that doesn't really tend to surface unless you're in 15-team leagues and deeper. So I think I was really interested to test exactly my knowledge with the prospects, who I think will be good. And I think the 5-year window is kind of perfect, you know, and I think there's a lot of strategies you can use. And I think we tend to talk about those in the draft room and the little chat board there on Fantrax. And so it's a lot of fun. And I haven't ran for the hills yet, and I'm having a lot of fun in it. So definitely.
Yeah. So, Jack, the Lance maybe is in for a shock as we get past the normal depth. Even TDGX, which is 20 teams, 40-man rosters, they own 800 players in that format. There's 800 players owned at any given time. By the time this league is done, there will be more players owned than are on Major League 40-man rosters.
Oh, yeah.
What does that mean to you, and why are you here?
I guess I aspire to one day work for a team, so I thought just going further and further into the depth of being able to evaluate these guys is something that I wanted to test myself on before I, you know, show up for a job, hopefully one day. So, I mean, I have the opportunity, luckily, to watch hundreds of games a year, and I guess I wanted to put that to better use by showing off or using, like, what time I have spent on games, and fully invest as many of these guys as I can.
So Jesse, have you ever done a draft and hold league before? Is that a format that you're familiar with, or something that you've been paying any attention to?
Yeah, you know, that's actually what kind of drew me to it in the first place. Is it's something that I've done slow drafts. You know, they call on NFBC, they call them the slow drafts. I've done those for about 7 or 8 years now. My brother actually introduced them to me about seven, 8 years ago, where we were splitting teams at first, would maybe get in 1-2 teams a year. And ever since then, I've branched out on my own and have done about 2 teams a year. So I'm pretty familiar with that. I usually use it as a draft prep for some of my more serious leagues at the beginning of the year. And that's really how I kind of dive into baseball, is I'll keep an eye on the off season. Then when January comes around, I'll hop into a few and just really start learning those deep players in the player pool.
Yeah. So you mentioned that this is a slow draft, and Lance, you mentioned you're sort of prepping as we go. This is a slow draft. We've got 8 hours between picks, or up to 8 hours between picks, and we take a break. That I think is the only way to do a deep draft in a new dynasty league without making someone really upset when you get up to pee to take a break. Is anyone on this pod new to a slow draft format?
No.
Oh, good, because you're gonna get real frustrated when you a day goes by between you getting any picks at all. We started this draft on Valentine's Day and at the end of the day, and it is, as of recording time, Friday evening or Thursday evening, and we are into round 5. There's 99 rounds total, so at this rate, I know, you know, early season, small sample sizes, we project to finish, I think, what, sometime around Memorial Day. I think that as you're in the draft, what are you doing to prepare for it? Obviously, this league came together really quickly, so I don't think anyone had 1,400 players ranked. I hope they didn't. But what are you doing to prepare? And between picks, how much attention are you paying to what other teams are doing? Jesse, let's start with you.
Yeah, I've been keeping an eye on it usually between picks. You know, I've been fortunate. I think really most of us, Tyler, I think you might be the closest to one end at the 3 pick. But at the 9 pick, it's kind of nice where I'm right in the middle. So I don't load up my queue too much until maybe it's 3 or 4 picks away. But it's always kind of nice. You know, I'm not ever too far away from my pick. So it's something that I've been really fluid on. You know, Lance kind of talked about it earlier. I don't think, because of the uniqueness of the league, that many of us have a solid idea of what we're doing, maybe. And that might just be me kind of making myself feel better. But it's definitely been something that every time, you know, maybe 3 or 4 picks away, I'll throw 3 or 4 guys in the queue that I might pick. And then it always ends up that I'll agonize over when it's my pick for about 15, 20 minutes until I finally just close my eyes and hit the pick button and hope no one laughs at me.
Jack, is that about your experience too? It sounds like you've been doing a lot more general off-season prep in trying to pull together your analysis of players. How deep of a list do you have heading into this draft, and how much are you referencing it as you're drafting?
So, okay, a lot. I have available to me every top prospect list that I like to use as a resource. I have some stuff with like prospect grades that we collect at Baseball Info Solutions. So I have people like ranked with that. I have our Dynasty Guru positional rankings as well on a spreadsheet. I got all of my dynasty teams, their rosters at the end of the year, I just paste them into one long list so I can see like where, because there's a lot of overlap. So who I'm cutting and who I'll be keeping. And so there's nothing specifically like players ranked 1 through 2000, but there's various sources of information that I cling on to. And I guess I'd like try to use as much as possible.
So, Lance, Jack referenced top prospect lists, consensus rankings, personal rankings, personal preferences. Especially, you know, we're currently 5 rounds in. As you are feverishly trying to prepare for the next 5 rounds on the fly, where are you going to find information, and what are you looking for to try to find information that might stand out from a league of 14 other so-called experts?
Yeah. No, I definitely see where you're coming from here with this question. I mean, I think the main thing for me was, I mean, it was so quick and off the cuff that I wish I kind of had more time to prepare, more so for just the deep aspect, because I think I feel like I'm personally well versed enough in just general fantasy knowledge to have done the first probably maybe 20-ish rounds. Maybe that might be a little overzealous, but those rounds 20 or so with just my own frame of mind and stuff. And I just straight off the top of my head on what I know about the players, what I know about their age, what I project them out to be, and then I do have a pretty good understanding of I'd say the top 100 prospects in baseball. I'm pretty well versed with. I mean, I put out ranks for my side Big Three. Actually, I think in late December, maybe early January, I got those out. So there's a lot of guys that I've been poking around with the thought of taking. And it's almost interesting. I'm sure that we'd all agree on this, but I'm very interested to see where the first non-MLB prospect, or excuse me, non-like major league player goes. So like we're talking the Gleyber Torres, the Eloy Jimenez, some of these guys that are maybe a couple years away, but can have such a huge impact. I think that's when I'm going to start to get very excited and start maybe going a little aggressive on some of the guys that I know I'm targeting in my head. And I'm sorry, I can't really release those here because I don't want you guys sniping them. But although I'm sure we've all sniped each other at some point in this. But
yeah, so I mean, you reference your strategy, especially with dynasty leagues. I think you know, one of the goals that I think we all have for this is that this format can be a reference for anyone who's in a new dynasty league starting up this year. There's going to be, hopefully no one's in a 99 bench league. Like that's too many roster spots. But if you're, you know, up to round 40, there should be some valuable information sure. that's coming across to anyone paying attention. And then after that, you've got a very deep stash list that you can reference. So I guess, Jesse, based on that, what do you think in terms of heading into this draft, like a new dynasty, someone either new to dynasty or joining a new dynasty league this year, what word of wisdom would you have for them in balancing youth versus veteran presence in the early rounds of a draft?
Well, if you look at my draft, you know, just speaking kind of from where I was coming from, grabbing Seager in the first round, grabbing Buxton a little later, I obviously went pretty youth heavy, and especially something like this in a draft and hold league, as unique as it is. In a maybe more traditional dynasty league, you can add those veterans a little earlier. You know, guys like Jake Arrieta, who went, I want to say, first pick of the fifth round or last pick of the fourth round, he's going to go a little earlier in a dynasty league. So I would take this as a real good jumping point for maybe how to rank the players in order. But what I would suggest to maybe someone starting a new, again, more traditional dynasty league where there's trading and where there's a little more roster turnover, I would definitely suggest grabbing the veterans a little earlier than they're going in this league. But in any league, I've always been really youth focused when I've been starting dynasty leagues, just because of you know, that's where a lot of times you can get a lot of the value. And if you get a guy, you know, Mike Trout's an easy pick, but 5 years ago getting Mike Trout early, obviously that sets up your dynasty team for success for, you know, 5-10 years. So I try to load up on as many of those guys, see if some of them hit, and then add a little veteran depth later and, you know, reassess midway through the first season.
So, Jack, you in the first three rounds of this draft with the number 4 overall pick, you took Bryce Harper, Charlie Blackmon, Edwin Encarnacion, and then in round 4 you took Robinson Cano. So you trended older very quickly. In what capacity did the format impact your decisions at all, or were you going best available? And how do you handle the aging curve with those elite players who should be going in the first 5 rounds of a dynasty draft? How do you approach the aging curve with them?
So I kind of, just from experience in other leagues, I have learned, unfortunately, most dynasty leagues don't actually make it. So as tragic as that may sound, and as like unhappy as many people will come by hearing that, I immediately thought, why would I want to try and win in year 5 and then have like the journey when I can just go for it right now? And I don't expect these players to really fall off all that quickly. Like Robinson Cano is a Hall of Fame caliber player. He's not going to hit age 35 and just completely collapse. These guys have longer periods of peak play. So I wasn't overly concerned. And when I was seeing some of the, I guess, there were picks that were not stretches if you are planning on playing forever, but since we only have a 5-year window, I figured most of these guys, I'm not drafting anyone who's like right on the verge of retirement. Many of these people actually like have just been extended or are hitting free agency soon. So like I had the idea that I want to compile as many stats right now as I possibly can, because of the uncertainty of the whole process. Like even the Dynasty Guru Experts League, like that didn't make it. So I wanted to try and win it right now. And there are definitely younger players available as I scroll through the list. But I didn't want to put any sort of preferential treatment towards them, not knowing how it was going to run in the long term.
All right, so I'm not sure which is more depressing, the idea that this league will last 5 years or that it won't. One editorial note, the Dynasty Guru Expert League, I believe, is still running. All of the Reader League variations that had any sort of official tie to the TDGX League have flamed out gloriously, which I think is a fair point. Lance, we're five rounds deep. You've made five picks based on whatever metric you were using at the time. How do you, five rounds into a league, into a draft, how do you evaluate your contention window for your team and what your first five picks mean for your next 30 picks?
Yeah, that's a good point. And I mean, I have kind of a funny team, too, because I ended up going with three Astros for my first three picks. And I had a weird slot. I was picking eighth. So, I mean, in my head, I went through the top seven and five, six, seven guys, and I would take any of them. And those were Trout. To me, at least, they were Trout, Betts, Bryant, Harper, Correa, Arenado, and Machado were kind of my I was looking at. And of course they went, I'm looking at an order right now for where they went, so that's obviously the exact order they went. So I was stuck with Altuve, Seager, Goldie, and I could have jumped down to maybe someone like Kershaw. And I ended up going with Altuve. And I'll bring up an interesting point here that I'd like maybe to talk about a little bit is, so this is 6x6 Rota, I believe, I hope at least.
Yes.
And it's OPS. And we added in our pitching category is a little bit funky, but the point I'm trying to make is that steals are something I think is, I had a kind of a tough time initially valuing. So when I saw Altuve on the board in a redraft league, that's a steal. I think at eight, I think most people would snatch him up there. He's going to get 35 bags a year. He's going to bat decently high in that order. He's going to score a lot of runs. He's going to have a high average. But with this, with the OPS factor for me, I think it diminishes the value of steals a ton. And it was one of those conundrums for me where I wasn't sure if Altuve actually was the best player on the board at the time. I was heavily interested in Seager and Goldie both. Even though Goldie's 30, I was still very much so interested in him. I think his batted ball profile and everything can age very well, and he could play into his mid-30s very, very easily, in my opinion. But I went with Altuve just because I really don't know. I almost went against what I was thinking, and I was like, you know what? I can solidify at least like 50-ish bags a year by scooping him right now in a 15 in a team in a league like this. So I ended up going with Altuve. Then my next pick was Springer. I'm just a general Springer fan, and I like the power speed combo there. So again, I go against exactly what I just said, and then I go Bregman with my third pick, which was kind of, I think, the age factor getting to me. I saw Addison Russell, I think, went a little bit before me, and a couple other guys who I thought were pretty young and up there. So I was like, you know what, let's go with Bregman. And then I think my next two picks, fourth and fifth round, I went J.D. Martinez and Yu Darvish, who are both guys in their 30s. J.D.'s going to be a free agent at the end of the year. Darvish coming off the Tommy John, I'm hoping he could stay healthy. So I guess it was really my first two rounds were a mix of who I knew was a good player and just good value in general. And then I went very young with Bregman, and now I'm going back to kind of the let's bounce the team back out with J.D. and Darvish. So I'm interested to see how this works. I mean, I'm not even an Astros fan, so.
Well, so I think you make a good point with Altuve. He's going to steal, but as you point out, steals and OPS don't normally play that well together. Altuve is one of the few players in this league that's a true six category player if the power is real or if the OPS holds. Jack and Jesse, feel free to split this up, but like, how much are you looking at the specifics of this format when you're evaluating the first three or four rounds of talent compared to just general best player off the board by standard format? How much are you considering OPS when you're making your pick?
You know, that's something that actually I took a look at my second pick with Freddie Freeman. I can't remember who at the time I was deciding between, but one of the reasons I settled on Freeman was because he was a top five guy in OPS. And that's something that appealed to me. You know, he didn't obviously contribute in steals, but could contribute in the other five categories. And I think Lance brings up a great point that I really haven't thought too much about because of the way the draft flowed for my team. But he's got a great point on the steal side, is that might be a one-off category. And Tyler, you touched on it a little bit too. That doesn't really play well with the other with the OPS and the other categories sometimes. So it's going to be interesting to see how that goes. And with that being said, you know, kind of got a live pick. I just took DJ LeMahieu from the Rockies. So I got a little bit of steals there. And with Buxton, you know, hopefully they can contribute to that category. But it's definitely something that I hadn't thought about too much, but I'm definitely going to think about moving forward.
I actually thought that the additional stats we put on made it even more realistic towards best player available than like traditional, I want to nail this category or that. I thought OPS does a pretty good job of just encompassing who the best hitter is. And strikeout to walk ratio, I know I've like long been a fan of in fantasy leagues. So just adding those on, I thought only enhanced like what we're all probably trying to do, just getting the best guy you can all the time.
So,
I also like hearing a little air horn on Jesse's pick.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you guys could hear that. I apologize.
So I want to talk, pivot a little bit. I don't know how frequently you guys are doing dynasty drafts. It's been a couple years since I've done a new league startup dynasty draft. But there was a while where I was doing them, you know, every year for a few years, and a lot of those leagues busted, but I'm still entering into the league thinking, okay, this is a dynasty. What's the last time? I mean, have you guys ever seen a class this deep for a dynasty league? Can anyone point to a class that's been this deep?
Steroid era.
Yeah. I think, and I don't know how popular dynasty baseball was during this dynasty. Fantasy baseball was during the steroid era.
I wasn't even playing back then, but that was the first thing that came to my mind.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think as I was in a few new drafts around the same time that TDGX was starting up. And I know that, you know, Chris Bryant was a first round talent as a prospect in those years. I'm looking at the draft, and I mean, the first real prospect who goes in this draft is, I guess, Andrew Benintendi, at round 3, pick 40 overall, who's guaranteed major league playing time to start the year. And then we've got a couple rookie eligible players, but, Jack, you are paying close attention to this. Is this the best year in memory to start a new dynasty league and have some parity from the get-go?
I don't know. I'm trying to think, like, maybe back when, like, Profar, Buxton, Correa were, like right at the top of prospect lists. I remember because, like, it seemed like two or three years ago.
Before he passed away.
Yeah, Tavares was in there, Profar. There were, like, Garrett Cole. There were a lot of prospects that actually far outperformed what is normal for prospect, like, realization of potential. So right now, there's a lot of high ceilings. Like, there are – and there's also more information available. 5 years ago, we would have not known who Victor Robles or Anderson Espinosa was for months later, or maybe, like, a year later than we know about them now, just because information flows so much faster, like even in that brief period of time change. So it's probably up there. Like, it's hard to argue, like, if you don't have a good shortstop in one of your dynasty teams, like, you've been doing something wrong. There's so many young shortstops available, and so many, like, they're to the point where they're going to be moved off to handle other positions for you. So it has to be one of the richer classes we've had in recent history.
Yeah, so Jesse, in dynasty leagues, hitting and pitching have been kind of going back and forth for years, but pitching's been at a lot more valuable because or at least a lot deeper because hitting has been very shallow. A lot of the infield positions have been, you know, there's a cliff where you don't want to own anyone outside of the top 10 players. It seems like this year that's trending in a different direction. With the shift toward maybe hitting being a little deeper than it's been in past years, what does that do for you in terms of planning on when to take a pitcher or how to approach the draft generally from picking up what kind of hitters you're looking for?
Yeah, it's something that I've always been really opposed to taking pitchers early. Pitchers scare me. You know, I joked on the chat board when we were drafting, when I took Archer last round, that no one told me I'd feel so nauseous when I took a pitcher. So in dynasty leagues, especially the with all the guys throwing so hard nowadays, and you know, the injuries have just been cropping up everywhere. We touched on it when we were doing the TDG starting pitcher rankings, where out of the top 30, 40 guys, 20 of them have already had surgery or had arm issues, maybe even 25 or 30 of them. So I've always really leaned heavily on the bats. You touched on it a few years ago. There weren't as many bats. Pitching was a lot deeper, so it was a lot easier to take a lot of bats early, you know, get those top guys and then dive into pitching a little later. Now it's switched with all the hitters coming up through the major leagues with the Correas and the Buxtons and the Seegers and all these guys that have just come up as 22, 23-year-olds and performed so well. It's really shifted the landscape. And with all the pitching injuries, it's also really, you know, depleted the starting pitching pool. And so, you know, with these new startup dynasty leagues, it's a little scarier to take those pitchers early because of injuries, but it is also kind of that fine line that the later you get, you know, that pool dries up pretty quickly. And all of a sudden you're taking a lot of inexperienced guys or a lot of guys with question marks or a lot of guys, you know, coming off injuries. So it's a pretty fine line. Again, I've always really leaned heavily on the hitters early on, and that's probably what I'll continue to do, but it's a lot more dangerous now. But it's just, you know, for me, it's just safer taking those hitters that you have a lot less injury risk and you know, a little more faith in.
So Lance, you took Yu Darvish in the fifth round. There was actually a mini pitcher run between the three of you guys, with Jack taking Strasburg, and just a few picks after you taking Darvish and Jesse taking Archer. When you were selecting Darvish, how much were you thinking about who was still left on the board as a pitcher? Were there pitchers you wished you had fallen to you? And how do you feel? Did you feel nauseous when you made that pick?
that was. I mean, honestly, every single pick I've made in this draft has been exceedingly hard for me to click the draft player button on the Fantrax little launch window. I'm looking at it right now because I'm actually up. So, but I mean, with Darvish, that was tough because I thought that there would be a pitcher run earlier between my picks. So I was eyeballing a couple other guys who were a little bit younger, and one of them was Chris Archer, which is pretty funny that he went right after to Jack, right? Did he go to you or Jesse? I'm not sure. He went to one of you, right?
Went to Jesse.
There we go. Yeah. So, I mean, and that's the thing. You have a 2 to 3 year age gap, I believe, between the two. I think I jumped on Fangraphs quick during that pick. And it was just tough. You know, I'm a little worried with Darvish and the Tommy John setback and any soreness he might experience. I know we saw that with Jose Fernandez and stuff and some other pitchers who went through the Tommy John. So, you know, but the thing that I think kind of pushed it over the edge for me was that it was actually, to some extent, the K to walk category. I think that Darvish is going to dominate that in this coming year, no matter how many innings he throws. He had some of the best peripherals of his career, if you look at it, actually, when he came back from Tommy John last year. And I like kind of the fact that he had that about 100, I think he threw 100 innings or so at the end of last season. So I like that kind of introduction and then some time off. And now he comes into this season not completely fresh, you know, not completely like, hey, I just got off surgery, this is going to be my first live game and whatnot. So that was a tough pick, though. Honestly, I mulled it over for a while. I like Archer's profile a ton. Strasburg was a guy that I was hoping would fall. I mean, I think that my number two pitcher, if I had to rank right now, would be Syndergaard. I really do like his profile, even with the bone spurs and stuff. I would have loved to have seen him fall to me, but I wasn't in the slightest expecting that around my window. So I think I threw it in the group chat here that we've all been talking through. But yeah, it was tough. It was Darvish, Archer, Strasburg, if he fell, would have been the conversation, a couple other guys too. So I ended up going with Darvish, and I'm I'm not nauseous with it. I like it as my ace for the next couple of years. I do think that there's a lot of injury risk with pitchers, so why not take a commodity like Darvish, who I think will get paid this offseason and hopefully pitch into his mid-30s at a relatively good rate. So
I want to look... I guess, Jack, do you have any thoughts about pitching before we stop talking about pitching for a little bit?
I guess skew towards hitters would be like my main advice. Lance took the starter with the best strikeout ratio or K9 in the history of baseball, so I guess he's pretty safe.
So looking at the first round exclusively, I think there's the popular saying in redraft leagues, you can't lose and you can't win in the first round, but you can lose in the first round. The first 15 picks, I'm not going to go through them. If you're interested in what they are, join the Facebook group. But I do want to give everybody a chance to just look at what's the first pick that surprised you in the first round? And Jack, let's start with you.
Let me go through these picks. Was Trey Turner taken in the first round?
No, he was taken in the first pick of the second round.
Yeah.
On the turn.
I think Trey Turner, David Dahl, and Gary Sanchez are hanging out together laughing about how overvalued and overdrafted they are going to be this year. how do I get to look at just the first round? This is my real question here. Because that would have been my guy if he happened to make
it. On the turn, so that's close enough. I mean, it's the 16th overall pick. It's basically a first round pick.
I just think that there are so many red flags. And I understand that he runs really fast, but he never made really hard contact prior to showing up in the major leagues. I understand that they use better balls in the major leagues now and everyone hits for more power. But he chases a lot. He doesn't have elite contact skills. He strikes out like four times more than he walks. I'm not saying that he's going to be a bad player. I'm just saying that if you're doing a dynasty startup, the value you'll get returned back to you in like year one, year two, I doubt matches the price you pay to get Trey Turner.
All right. Jesse, what was the first pick that surprised you?
Yeah, the first pick, I don't know if it was necessarily a surprise, but the first kind of interesting pick that I really had to think about was Clayton Kershaw. I had the 9 pick, and he really never crossed my mind. I think Lance talked about kind of the top 7 guys. I had those guys as well, and I had Altuve, Seager, and Goldschmidt coming next. So I think the first 10 picks you could have kind of mapped out in some sort of order. But Kershaw, and Syndergaard at 15, those are two guys where I get the value of an ace, but it goes back to our previous conversation about me just being a little risk averse when it comes to pitching. And Kershaw's had the back injury, Syndergaard's had the arm injury. And I just, there was no way, no matter really what pick I had, I wasn't going to take a pitcher in the first or second round. So that was one kind of thing I was going to keep an eye on, was how were pitchers going to be treated in this draft. And then you go to the second round and you see Bumgarner and Sale and Scherzer all going in the second round as well. And I just wasn't really kind of sure how that was going to go. So that was the first pick that really stood out to me. And then Marte at 14, that's another pick that, I don't think it's out of place. It was just a pick that I was kind of shocked to see him go in the first round over a guy like Bogarts or, even a guy like Miggy Cabrera, who's a little older, but, still providing pretty solid value. So that was one of the surprising picks for me.
What about you, Lance? Are there any picks left for you to be surprised by?
I was about to say, we just covered the ones that I was most surprised by. Definitely Turner for me. Wouldn't have taken him there. I would have let him fall. Honestly, he's one of those guys this year that I'm just going to let everyone else have. I don't think I really want any shares. But that's a topic for another day. I think the one that I guess we haven't gone to would be in the third round for me. Did Billy Hamilton go 32 overall? That's correct, I believe.
He did.
Yeah.
That's one that I don't really understand. I mean, I understand trying to kind of put a stranglehold around the steals category. But as we mentioned, this is 6x6, and OPS that we added for the hitting side diminishes that. Steals go from being like 10% of the total a point pool possibility, 1 in 10 to 1 in 12. And as we've talked about already, the steals don't correlate to OPS too hot. I understand he's going to steal 50 bags, 60 bags, whatever, but I don't ever see the OPS getting above like 750. I mean, and that's going to be a career year if it does, honestly. And it's just one of those things. He's not going to hit for average. And it's just that early, man. I don't know. I mean, you look at the picks around it, and I would 100% rather have someone like a Schwarber. I'd take an E5, Edwin Carcione. Yelich, I'd like more. I mean, even if you jump down to, like, would it be insane to see Benintendi there as opposed to Hamilton? I'd rather have Benintendi. Man, I'd rather have Dahl. I'd rather have Mazzara, who went in the early fourth round. It's just, maybe it's just a personal thing, but I'm not taking steals that early, you know, when there's guys that we know that can fly through a minor league system and just be a steals asset, like we've seen Jankowski do and with the Padres. And I mean, Jorge Mateo is pretty fast, the Yankees prospect. There's a lot of other guys that I think that you could just get super, super late that can provide this speed. And that's just a weird pick, you know. I don't know. I don't like it at all. But that's just a personal vendetta, I guess.
I have found that Billy Hamilton tends to be fairly polarizing. There are people who,
I guess,
have won in the past through him, and there's everyone else. I want to push back on you, Jesse, a little bit. So you mentioned basically who you were surprised by, which were in the first two rounds, really, which was pitchers and Starling Marte. So if we take the pitchers and Starling Marte out of the first round, that moves Bogarts, Cabrera. Do you feel like where would you see the question of like, okay, should I be taking Starling Marte or Lindor or Freeman or Springer? Where do you rank him with, like, where would you put him?
No, that's a great question. And, you know, I'm kind of diving into the second round a little bit, you know, maybe Marte's four or five picks a little earlier than I'd expect. I don't fully disagree with everyone with Trey Turner. I do think he's overvalued. I think he holds pretty good value in this league. I personally don't think he was drafted too early. I would have taken him over Marte as an infielder with a potentially similar skill set, maybe not as much power, but I think Trey Turner has a lot of upside. Add Bogarts above him, again, Miggy, even Lindor, just because of position, you know, the prime position playing shortstop. I would take all those guys over him. So, you know, it's in a league like this with experts, so to speak, you know, guys who are really into dynasty baseball, I don't think too many players are going to go more than maybe four, five, six, seven picks too early, especially early in a draft, you know, except a guy like Billy Hamilton, which I agree with Lance completely, where the risk on him just for me definitely outweighs the reward. And the best case scenario of him staying healthy, which hasn't, you know, happened too often, he provides steals and some runs. But, you know, I was looking at his OPS last year, and, you know, by all accounts, he had a pretty good year for Billy Hamilton. You know, it's 664. He hit 260, three home runs, 17 RBIs. And so he really becomes a two-category guy, and he may win, you know, Mark steals, but he's not going to be helping too much in any other categories. And that's a best-case scenario type thing where he stays healthy. But you know, I see the allure of him. I've been sucked into that quite a bit. You know, admittedly, I've had a lot of Billy Hamilton shares over the years, and you know, I kind of once bitten, twice shy. I've got off that train.
So, Jack, just wrapping up, one of the things we talked about around Billy Hamilton is the concern about, you know, only contributing to a few categories. That's been true for discussion around pitchers too. With the dynasty league, especially in this weird format, especially one that's this deep. We also do weekly lineups, which I think also plays a little bit into, it doesn't play into how people would value, but it does play in a little bit into how players will accrue value over the course of the season. When you're looking at your path to championship, how, or a team's path to championship, how much are you looking at needing to contribute in all categories versus being able to lock up a few? How important is that in dynasty, maybe compared to redraft?
So, I mean, I think it's not, my personal philosophy is that they are identically important in redraft and dynasty to have across the board or like individual stat compiling guys. So I almost exclusively run with the idea of best player available. So if you have two elite outfielders and then let's look at our own draft right here. And then you have the opportunity to take Benintendi or Byron Buxton or Yelich. in the third round, I would never shy away from taking those guys when the opportunity to get them as opposed to a lesser player that suited a need. I think need-based drafting just kind of leads to like just holes in general. Like, because as soon as that person gets hurt, then it's a bigger problem because you are lacking the stats and the surplus that you needed to cover up your problems that you had. So I'm always big on just take whoever you value the highest. Don't worry about, oh, I'm going to need a second baseman now, and like it's getting thin. Because if it's getting thin, that means everyone else is already filling up on it, and they'll likely just sit around for you longer.
So last question to you, Lance. You're up to pick right now. By the time that this airs, your pick will be old. But we're in round six. You don't have to tell us who you're picking in real time, but who are you considering, and what are the options that you're weighing when you're thinking through this pick, like in real time on a slow draft?
Yeah, I don't mind being a little bit open with this either. This is a tough pick, and I mean I could say that for every pick, honestly, and I'm sure we all can. But I do agree with the shying away from pitcher philosophy. I have Darvish. I'm going to sit on Darvish. I'm probably not going to go for another pitcher for a while. I'm probably going to try to combo up some of the guys in the Jameson Taillon tier and that, and I'm sure we're all going to. So that's going to be interesting once we hit that point. But I'm really looking right now in how much I value a guy like, let's say, who's on the board here? I was looking down. I don't want to give away some of the deeper sleepers I was looking at, but I mean, I was looking at, honestly, I Jacob DeGrom's a guy that just, I like watching, number one, and I enjoy as a player. So that kind of plays into my love for certain players, and I kind of have to try to eliminate when I play fantasy. But I was looking at guys like, at the top of the board, particularly one that's standing out to me as I mull this over is Hanley Ramirez. He's a guy who put up one of the best seasons of his career last year, over 100 RBIs. He had 36 home runs, batted above like probably like 270, 280-ish. And I know he's old, he's 33, but he now transitions to a full-time DH role. And he's a righty, he plays in Fenway. It's just, I understand that it may only produce 2 years of value for me, but I think that we may be overlooking him to some extent. You know, we see some guys. I mean, I'm surprised Nick Castellanos. I don't think that went to either of you guys, but I love Nick Castellanos as a player. I think he's a fantastic player, heavily overlooked in my opinion. But I mean, some of these other guys around here, like I keep looking and I keep going, man, Hanley could put up 235 home run seasons back to back. And, you know, that's at pick 83 overall, which is what I'm looking right now. That's unbelievable. I'd love that. So I guess I'm kind of really just mulling over if I'm willing to add a guy who I know has that short-term value and who, in my opinion, I think is the best power bat on the board right now. I mean, another guy, I will release my Cardinals fandom here. I'm a Cardinals fan. And I know that doesn't get the best rap in a lot of outlets on the baseball sphere, but, I'm not from St. Louis, so I guess I haven't interacted with any of those people. I hope to be more of a nicer Cardinal fan to anyone who doesn't like the Cardinals. But Matt Carpenter is a guy that I'm seriously considering here. Probably a little bit of my bias, but he's a great OPS guy. They find a way to get him in the lineup all the time. He hasn't run into too many injury problems. He had a little bit last year, but I think you could see him on a track. He plays a lot of positions, which with this deeper roster probably doesn't matter too much. But I think that I'll probably go Hanley. And if you see something different by the end of tonight, then I don't really know what happened in my mind, but I guess that's kind of my thought process right now.
All right. So I don't want to have anybody else give away their strategies too much. You didn't name the player that I'm hoping falls to me, and that's all I'm going to say. So just to close out, I mean, we're going to probably do this again after a number of rounds that probably represents an average Dynasty Leagues draft. Just to close out, I guess, looking at the whole draft board, if you guys could name one pick that's not Billy Hamilton or a pitcher, or maybe it's a specific pitcher, who you think is either way too high or way too low in the first five rounds of this draft, that you think should be going, you know, maybe within like 10 or a whole round, 10 picks or a whole round deep different. If you guys can name one, and I'll start. In my mind, I took Christian Yelich with the 33rd overall pick. This is an OPS league. I loved that pick. I really considered him sooner, and I was shocked that he fell to me. When I look at the outfielders that that went before him, I mean, I took Stanton before him, so I can't be mad at that. But I was really surprised that Charlie Blackmon and Gregory Polanco went before him based on, one, Blackman's age. I think Blackmon has the better overall skill set, but in this type of dynasty league, I think the difference between Blackmon and Yelich is very slim, and I would favor age in that scenario. And I think similar with Polanco, I think this being 6x6, the OPS category, I love Yelich's hit tool. I think the power spike is real. I really think Yelich is a second round outfielder in any dynasty league. And you know, if you get him as your OF1, you should be happy. So if you don't have to pick your pick, one of your picks, but you're welcome to, Jesse.
Yeah. You know, I'm looking through the draft board quick to see if anything stood out. One of the picks actually is Jax. I really like Steven Strasburg in the fifth round. You know, I touched on pitching and we all kind of have about all of the injuries to a lot of the top pitchers, and you see Strasburg go after, you know, guy who's a little unproven in Carlos Martinez. Obviously, he's had a year plus of some solid stats, but and maybe some veterans. Just looking at the pitchers who were before him, Jake Arrieta, Urias, hasn't pitched too much in the major leagues. But with Strasburg's injury history, it's definitely a red flag. But he's also could be one of the best dynasty pitchers. He's still 28 years old. He still possesses those tools. And that's something where if he puts it together and actually stays healthy after all these kind of freak, you know, some freak injuries, some legit injuries in the past, I think he could be, you know, one of the top starting pitchers in the league for the next 4 or 5 years. And to get him in the fifth round after maybe 7, 8 pitchers, that's pretty impressive. And then, you know, one pick, you know, I just touched on a little bit. I made DJ LeMahieu. You know, I was looking at him and I really like that pick. I know, you know, last year might have been his best season just because he's a year older, but he's still in his late 20s and just kind of peeking at the stats. He had a 9.11 OPS last year, and yeah, he's not going to hit 350 again, but if he stays in Colorado, and I think that goes for all Colorado guys, you know, he could definitely put up some similar stats over the next 4 or 5 years and hit 300, score 100 runs, and put together a decent OPS with some steals. And he might be one of those rare players that can steal double-digit bags and still have, you know, 800 OPS. And I'll take that in the sixth round from a middle infielder, you know, all day. So I'm hoping that pick works out.
Jack?
So two guys stood out to me. Kyle Seager, who gets better every single year of his whole career, and that will never end, because trend lines never lie. And he improves all around every year, it seems. Like, his plate discipline and his hard hit rates and everything indicates that he's getting better and better. And then much earlier, I was kind of surprised Joey Votto almost made it to the third. I was praying he was going to slip back around to me. He has a career WRC plus better than Miguel Cabrera's. So the fact that he almost made it to pick 30, where did he get? Second to last pick in the second round. So 29. I thought that was a little strange. I know that he is a little older, but he is going to pile up stats for whoever the Mega Powers is.
Yeah, and he has a profile that ages. Yeah, he has a profile that ages well. That's been true for him.
Exceptionally well.
Lance.
Yeah, the one that I'll throw two. I'll do one that I think was actually good, almost like the porridge is too hot, porridge is too cold, porridge is just right, or whatever that old children's folktale is. I really like the Miguel Sano pick at 45, the end of the third round. I'm not sure, that was the guy who took Thor and Turner. So that's kind of, I love that move because, I mean, I don't like Turner, I do like Thor, but Sano is a guy who is still very young and possesses, I believe, the second best raw power in baseball behind Stan. And I mean, me and Jesse, I believe, were talking just before this podcast started recording about just the Twins and in Buxton, who he took, I believe. And I brought up Sano, and you know, he's one of those guys who just, I mean, he could be a completely different hitter in 2 years. You know, he doesn't swing at a lot of pitches. He's a very odd profile. He's very patient, even though he strikes out so much, from what I understand, as far as peripherals go. And I mean, if I just feel like if he falls into a good hitting coach or someone that he syncs up well with and they can refine his swing, I mean, this guy can hit 45, 50, 55 home runs, in my opinion. He has just immense power. And I mean, he was a highly touted prospect, and I could see that happening in 2 years. You know, I could see him, if Sano develops into what we're looking at him, he can be a Bryant type value. You know, he could be a top 10 pick, in my opinion, in a couple of years. And I mean, and there's a lot, he may not ever hit above 270, but I mean, if he gets to that 260 window and can put up 40, 45 home runs, you know, you're looking at an unbelievable talent. I really like that pick. I was hoping he'd fall back to me. Probably would have taken him over JD Martinez, which was my 53rd overall pick. And one I don't like, it kind of goes back to the steals and just the fact I don't think he's a 20 home run bat. I don't even think he's a 15 home run bat. It's Jonathan Villar. Just not a big fan in general. The guys behind him, I think, just provide a much better base. I don't think position scarcity is something you need to worry about in this kind of league. So if that was a factor in that pick, I don't believe it was a well-assessed factor. But, I mean, the guys behind him, again, and I like comping picks to picks who go right afterwards. I mean, you have Gregory Polanco there who I believe Brett Sayre took in a very Sayre-esque pick, and I do like Polanco a lot, but I mean, I'd rather have Polanco over VR. You got Stanton there, Votto there, Odor there, Story there. You know, those are all even middle infield guys I would probably take over VR. Just don't believe in the steals being too much of a value in this league. He's not a good OPS guy, and I mean, he can sit between 10 and 15 home runs for the rest of his career, and I don't think anyone would be surprised. So those are my two.
All right, so we're going to wrap up so that Lance can make his pick and this draft can keep. But if you are interested in following along, you can follow on Twitter. It's the hashtag TDG99. You should definitely join the Facebook group and haze our picks, heckle us endlessly. Join us in heckling Mark over his Billy Hamilton pick. That's the Facebook group, The Dynasty Guru. Just we'll go back through, tell everybody where they can find you. I'm Tyler. You can find me at Tyler's Notes on Twitter. Jesse?
Yeah, you can find me at Jesse Meehan, JesseMeehan at Twitter.
Jack?
You can find me at JackCecil1 on Twitter. And again, I'm very active on the Facebook page, so if you are putting anything up there, I will usually reply.
Yeah, I'm at Lance Brozdow, so that's L-A-N-C-E, my first name, and then B-R-O-Z-D-O-W, first seven letters, my last name. And I encourage you to check out big3sports.com, spell out the number 3 there. That's a site I run, and we always got some good content flowing through. So, and I'm very active on Twitter as well, so if anyone ever has questions or just wants another opinion and kind of help their sanity in making a selection in any other draft, I'm always willing to help out. So thanks for having me on.
I don't know how sane any of us will be in 99 true, picks, true. But we'll see. All right, thanks, and join us next time.